Cool. So Thomas has been speaking for the past hour or so on F-sharp and more of the data science aspect, and that was really focused on essentially how between the scripting environment and the type providers and the static types, like F-sharp is a great choice for data exploration. And I think that's completely true. And on the other hand, prototyping is not the only thing you need to take into account. Like at some point, your script is great, it's on your machine, and at some point you will probably, you can really have two types of problems. One of them is a script is nice, but you want to put it in production. And that's actually a very, very strong story for F-sharp and data science, because in other languages, for instance, R is also great for scripting. On the other hand, I don't know if any of you has tried to put R in production. That's probably not a great idea. One of the beauties of F-sharp is that I can have my script, and literally in 1 minute, I can make it to a class. I can dump it into a solution, which is C-sharp, F-sharp, whatever you want. And it will just run like a champ and with very good performance. And that's pretty nice. So it's one language where you can go from scripting to production like pretty seamlessly. The second problem you can hit, or which is important to touch on, is scripting is great. Except that, for instance, I'm often working on a Surface, and a Surface is a fantastic device, but hey, I have two cores. That's a bit limiting. I have a certain amount of memory. That's a bit limiting. And maybe it won't cut it. And so that's the place where the other thing where typically scripts break down a bit is like if you want to scale up. And so part of the thing I want to talk about is how that problem is not that much of a problem. And particularly using a library called Embrace and Azure in the cloud, you can actually scale and essentially keep the best of both worlds and keep the scripting environment you like, all the .NET tools you like, but start to scale to the wazoo. So briefly, first I should maybe have started there. Like I'm Matthias, you can find me on Twitter at Brandervender. I usually come with this picture there, so it's not really looking like me. So next time you can connect like the face with this thing. I have maybe a bit of a strange history, at least compared to most developers I know. Is like I have been doing C-sharp for about 10 years. And 5 years ago, like one guy told me, hey, like you should really learn a new language every year. And I thought that's actually not a bad idea. It happened to be 2010 when F-sharp shipped. And so I started looking at it and I played with it for 1 week, 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, I was really hooked. And since then, I have been doing like mostly F-sharp. The part which is maybe a bit unusual in my background is that the one thing I'm actually not trained in is software engineering. Like I spent a long time with sitting like in schools, but what I learned was really mostly economics, statistics, forecasting, that type of thing, decision theory, and the other side was operations research, like applied math optimization. So this is really where I'm coming from. So the software side is complete accident. So it's like my life is really a long series of accidents, starting with I didn't plan to be a software engineer, I didn't plan to learn F-sharp, and just like lots of good things happened to me, so I'm blessed. The other thing is like I do have a tiny bit of an accent. It's very, very subtle. It's a tiny hint. And the reason I'm mentioning it is like first, you guessed that I'm coming from San Francisco, which is true. So the accent is French, but the reason I'm mentioning this is because one, it can make me hard to understand at times. On top of that is I have this tendency when I speak about topics I care about, and F-sharp is one topic I care about, and machine learning another one I care about, I do tend to speed up. And so as a result, it's like I speed up a lot, and then it's like nobody can make a word I say. So if that happens, it's like, please like let me know, tell me to slow down, or like wave your hands. Do I have a deal? Yes. Like otherwise, I will just go, and it's like, yeah. Plus, like the week has been a bit long and fueled a bit by beer as well, which doesn't improve the situation. Cool. So my goal today is like I'm going to focus specifically on this library called Embrace. And what I want to do is to introduce it maybe with two examples and to give you a sense of how this is useful and what type of scenarios maybe you should be thinking about it. What I'm not going to do is like this is not a detailed presentation on everything you need to know about Embrace, because essentially like if it's for you, then I know you will go and you will play with it and you are smart enough to read the manual. And otherwise, if you don't care about it, like it's, then it's, there is no point in me going into deep detail. So I'm more going to try to go broad and give you a sense of why should you care, and is this even for you? So the plan is going to be to introduce a bit of Embrace, not that much. And then I'm going to follow really two tracks, because I said before that if scripting is great, but at some point it breaks down, or it can break down because you don't have enough resources, and there are really two ways this can happen, or two different problems. The first one is, let's call it a big compute. It's like I have it's not about data, I just have like computation and they're just very expensive. And so this is one thing I want to show where Embrace is very good, and I'm going to take a machine learning example. The machine learning side is not particularly important. It applies to other scenarios, but it happens that machine learning is kind of what I do and what I enjoy, so I'm going to be focusing on this. And the second side is more on the data processing example. So it's like the computation is trivial, it's not really about CPUs, but I do have a lot of data. And so what I want is I want to also scale, and that these are just two very different problems. So I'm going to give you an example on this, which is going to be strictly about data processing. And between these two, I hope I will give you enough of a sense for where Embrace can fit, and why F-sharp is a good fit there, and so on and so forth. Also a bit of a warning. So when I started doing presentations, like people told me like you should absolutely avoid to write live code because things are going to go wrong. You should not depend on the internet because things are going to go wrong, and all these things. And so I'm going to violate all of these rules. So I depend completely on the internet because I'm going to run on a cluster, which is in Azure right now. I'm going to write live code, which means like I could completely crash. And so it's like I'm hoping to go for this big, nice jump where everything is going to be smooth, but I might end up like this poor creature terribly crashing down, burning. So I hope this will not be the case, but you're warned. In a way, like it's a win-win. Like either it works and I'm going to prove that it's awesome. If it doesn't, it's like you're going to have a very entertaining spectacle. So it's all good. So what is Embrace? Embrace is a library. It's open source. It has been written by the good people at Nessos who are based in Athens. It's written in F-sharp, but it's actually it's one of these libraries where they put also a very big effort in making it C-sharp friendly. So there is also a fairly decent API for C-sharp, not quite as maybe powerful, but it's usable from both sides. In spirit, if you know what Spark is, it's kind of in the same space. It's like you want to be able to work from the scripting environment, but like scale things. Scale things up. Their website is at embrace.net. So this is like their logo looks a bit like that, like this big M. Like it's like the that's Embrace. And they're also on Twitter as Embrace the Cloud. And so I just lifted it from their page, like Embrace is a simple programming model for scalable cloud data scripting and programming with F-sharp and C-sharp. You can script Azure for large-scale compute and data processing directly from Visual Studio. So that's kind of what they do. So I'm going to try to show you how that looks in practice. So the first example I want to look at is a machine learning example. So I suspect that in that room, like many people know much more about machine learning than I will ever know. So I'm always feeling a bit intimidated speaking here. But like for people who maybe don't know that much about machine learning, the point of machine learning is to write a program. And that program is supposed to be, that program is supposed to do something. That's usually the case for programs. And it's supposed to also get better at doing whatever it does as more and more and more data is fed into it. And this without having to change the code. So the goal, you write your code, and as things go, is like magically your program improves. And the example I'm going to show is not, is a machine learning example, but it doesn't really matter that it's machine learning. So one of the reasons I do like to use F-sharp for machine learning, and that's some of the points Thomas touched on, is like one is like there is a built-in scripting environment. And so that's just extremely convenient because I'm going to explore. I can very rapidly iterate and create models. That actually happens also for non-machine learning topics. I just go open the scripting environment and just like try things out. And I have just found from my personal experience that it's extremely productive. So the point I said before is that that's great. Actually, the other reason I like it too is like if you don't have a scripting environment, your life working with data is going to be a bit miserable. To specifically explain what I have in mind is like what's nice, I can just open my script, open my data, and then I can just change my model all day long without having to reload the data. In most cases, it's not an issue, but imagine that if your data takes you 10 minutes to load, you're going to spend your whole day like reloading data imagine having a build which takes 10 minutes. That's kind of what you get, but for data. So scripts are great because I load things in the script, and then I'm done. I can just play with code, try out ideas, and that's really what I want. So what I want to show is like the problem I want to address is, on one side, like scripts are a bit limited on this level. On the other hand, is like we also have like lots of opportunities, specifically in the machine learning side, is like pretty much whenever you see something like sequence map, you know that you have something which should be parallelizable. And so this is kind of where I'm headed, and see like maybe that's one thing we can use to scale. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a machine learning example. I'm going to start on my local machine working as if I didn't really need to scale. And then I'm going to cloudify it. So if it's not a word yet, it should be. So I'm going to take that guy and like write it up so that I can actually scale. And we're going to see how we can actually use opportunities for parallelism there. The problem we're going to take is coming from the Kaggle digit recognizer, which is really like the minced data set. So what it is, it's a big classic. And so what we have is we have a data set. We have somebody asked many, many humans to write numbers on sheets of paper. These were all digitized. So you have these nice samples of numbers. And the name of the game is you're trying to build a program which will see a picture and say, this is a 6, this is a 5. That's kind of what we're after. And what we're going to use here is the simplest possible algorithm we could use. It's going to be k-nearest neighbors. So the idea of k-nearest neighbors is if I had like many pictures, say some of them of cats, some of them of dogs, and you give me a new picture, one thing I could do is take that picture, compare it to every picture I know, look at, does this look like this picture, this is a cat, this picture, this is a cat, and count how many cats I got which are similar to my picture, and classify on this. So k-nearest neighbors does that. I have a training sample of, in that case, images which are numbers and labels. So it's like I have an image, I have a scan, and the label is like this is a 6, this is a 5, and so on. So I'm going to look at all that sample. And if I'm trying to classify a new image, I'm going to take that image, compare it to everything I have, look at the ones which look the most like it, like say the 6 ones which are the most similar, and then I'm going to count them and predict the most frequent one. For instance, like 3 nearest neighbors would be, I have one image, I'm going to compare it to say all the images I have, take the 3 images which are the most similar, maybe 2 of them are a 6 and 1 of them is a 2, I'm going to predict it's a 6. That's kind of what the algorithm does. So pretty simple. And to do that, what I'm going to use is the Embrace. Also, I'm going to use the Embrace starter kit. So Embrace is actually entirely on GitHub. So I'm just going to show you. If you want to use Embrace, the best way to do it is like to go to a GitHub. And on GitHub, you have the Embrace project. And under the Embrace project, which is totally open source, you have something called the Embrace starter kit. And so what it does is like it gives you both some tutorials, some examples which show you like how to work with files, how to work with many different things, and also set up so that you can deploy a cluster on Azure, or so that you can run it locally on your machine and all these things. And there are actually some pretty, the number of contributors, I actually see that the latest pull request was from a guy called Don Syme, apparently. I don't know quite who that is, but like, the fact that Don is contributing to it also should give you maybe a hint that this is actually a pretty interesting library and that people actually do contribute to it. So, good. So it's like what I did already is like what I have on my machine now. I'm going to go to Visual Studio. And what I have on my local machine is I have a couple of solutions here. So I'm going to start actually with the data, and I'm not even going to look at the cluster yet. So I mentioned that I have a data set which is like the minced data set, so I reduced it a bit because like first I'm going to start on my local machine and I don't want it to be like too painful. So the type of data set I'm looking at, and that's kind of how the day of a data scientist maybe will look like, is like you start your day with a big chunk of data. So in this case, like what I have is I have 5,000 images. This is a CSV file. Each image, so the first column here, each of the rows is an image. Like the first column is saying this is a 1. And then I have many, many, many pixels. And that's the CSV, that's the gray encoded scan for each pixel of the image. The next one is a 0. This is a 1. This is a 4. So I have all these images which I can use to train a classifier or a model. And I have also a similar data set here, which I will use for validation, which is similar. So one of them I will use to train, the other one I will use to test my model and see how good or how bad my model is doing. So.
How many, sorry, I missed the number of pixels?
It's like 28 by 28. So like, I don't know how many that is, but that's somewhere under 800 features and somewhere north of 700. I'm terrible at math. Like, well, that type of math. I'm not the guy to ask for like who's what for the tip. Like it's not. So I'm going to show you a bit. Like so, I just quickly to give you maybe a more direct sense of what the data is I just wrote a quick visualizer in F Sharp. That's actually one of the nice things that I can also use everything from all the libraries from .NET. And so here. I wrote a visualizer. I'm going to just load some data and take like the nine first ones and just show you a bit. So this is kind of how the data set looks like. Like this is not clean numbers. This is what humans write. So this is a three. This is a, see, this is probably a five, but even as a human, I'm not entirely sure. This is a bit dirty. So the point here is like it's a real data set. Like it's not clean data, and you're just trying to write a classifier to figure out, to learn from this and recognize other numbers like that. So that's kind of how the data looks like. And that's like 28 by 28 grayscale. I have 5,000 of these. The real data set is, I think, 50,000. But cool. So if I were to work on this problem, what I would do is like I need to do a couple of things. I will need to load the data. I will need to, and when I describe the k-nearest neighbor, I will load the data. I need something which is like an example where I need the labels and I need the pixels. I need some form of a notion that I said that I wanted to do was to find images which looked similar to the image I was trying to predict. So that's actually a big question by itself, is like how are two images similar? And so first I'm going to start running some of the code here. So what I'm after is I'm going to define a type, which is an image. And that's just a collection of integers that's going to be my pixels. And my examples, like nice type in one line, is like I have a label, I have pixels, and this is what I'm trying to extract from my file. So what I stated was I want to say, like I want to essentially be able to say, is this image more similar to this image than this other image? One distance we could use is, in this case, what am I using? I'm using the Manhattan distance. One thing you could do is say, like really, like I could look at it pixel by pixel, take pixel one from first image, second image. Is this the same, the further apart, the more different, pixel two, and so on and so forth. If I did that, I would end up, essentially I'm doing like a distance pixel by pixel for each image. And so here I wrote like one possible way to write a distance. So I'm saying, give an image, take another image, compute the total distance between them. This is actually more of a mutable C-sharp, almost C-sharp style, which is kind of convenient. I can do it if I want. And here I'm going to say iterate over the pixels. For each pixels, compute the difference, take the absolute value, sum them up. So if the two images are the same, this will be zero. And the more pixels differ, the more the images will be different. And so that gives me like a plausible way to compare images. So good, I have a distance. And then my predictor will be simply pretty much the way I described it. So what I want to do is I want the following. If you give me an image and you tell me I want to do a three nearest neighbor, what I want to, and I need a sample for that, like in that case, my 5,000 images, what I will do is I take the sample, for each element in the sample, compute the distance between that image and the pixels in the sample, sort it by that, so that like I have the from the closest to the furthest apart. Out of these guys, take the top five, top three, which are like the closest images. Then look at the labels, bucket them by labels. So count like how many are threes, how many are ones, how many are sevens. Sort that so that I want the most frequent by label and give me then the label which was predicted. So this is my classifier and this is taking like a glorious six lines. And now I'm going to load my data, which I have locally here. So there would be actually probably nicer ways to do that with a type provider, but like I'm going to go old school and bare bones. And so here I could do a parser, like every line in my file is a string, just break it according to the comma, grab the label in the first column, grab the pixels afterwards, and shove it into an example. And now I can load my two data sets. So this is like one style which is really nice also in F sharp, is like this composition of like you end up writing like tiny operations, and then you start from the data and you transform it until you get what you want. So here I have my training path. I want to read all the data for I'm going to drop the headers and then map it to parse it to what I want. And so here we go, and I read my data. So that's the training set. I have my validation set or my test set. I'm going to start the timer here. And I'm done. And so now is like what I want to do is I want to see how good or how bad my model is. So here what I'm going to say is I'm going to say create a predictor using the training set I used and using one neighbor. And that's my model. For every element in the test data, compute what the model predicts, look at what the true answer was. If the two are the same, that's a one, and otherwise that's a zero. And if I average that out, this is going to give me like the percentage correct for my model. So let's run this. And so as you can see, like it's not hugely slow, but it took me like 5 seconds to get a result out of this. So this is not too bad, but I'm also working on a... So the first part is like in a glorious 50 lines of code, I have a classifier which works, which performs like in 5 seconds, gives me an answer. And the answer is actually pretty good. It's like I got like 93.4 correctly classified. So maybe like it's not like what a neural network would give me, but like at the same time, hey, it's 50 lines of code and it took me 5 minutes. So there is also something to be said for that. Good. So now the problem with this is like this is maybe not, so this is nice. I can experiment. I could also start tweaking my model, maybe trying a different distance, trying different things. However, this is starting to be, this is potentially going to be a bit slow. And if I start to increase the data specifically with that model, like this is this is mapping over, for instance, all my testing examples. So if I move from 5,000 to 50,000, it's going to go at least 10 times slower. And actually, given the algorithm I'm using, it's probably going to go more like 10,000 times slower. So it's great to be in the scripting environment, but I would like to be able to scale. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to move out from my local example, and I'm going to cloudify it. And I'm going to start using a bit of Embrace to show you how I could do that. So here, I'm simply, I have another small file somewhere, which is defining my connection string to the cluster. I mean, really, like deploying a cluster is as simple as that. So there used to be a website which did that automatically, but it looks like it's not up right now. But like this script is essentially, I can say, like, grab your pub settings from Azure, drop it down, and then is like I can just, so lots of comments, but I can just create a cluster. It's going to take 3-4 minutes, and my cluster is up. So I can create a cluster from one machine, which is probably not very interesting, to the biggest I have tried is like 64, and I think there is virtually no limit. But like that's pretty convenient, because if I want to scale, I can't have like a computation farm in my basement. It's expensive, it takes lots of space. What's really nice about something like the cloud is if I need 100 machines for 5 minutes or for 1 hour, I can just get it. Like I can get as much power as I want, spin it up, kill it when I'm done. So anyways, so my cluster is up. I did that before coming because I wanted to check that it worked. So I'm going to go to this other script. And first I'm going to show you a bit how that looks here. So now I'm connecting to the cluster. So what can I do here in my scripting environment? I could do things like cluster.show, and here I can see, for instance, how many workers do I have. So let's do that. And so here, how big was it? So I can see that I have a cluster with 4 machines running, currently completely underutilized. You can see also things like, I think when it was last, so when it was started, yeah, things like that. So you have like, from the scripting environment, I can start looking at what's happening on my cluster and how is it doing and stuff like that. The other thing I can ask is this, cluster.show processes. So this is going to show me what is going on or what has been going on in my cluster. So here I can see like, essentially this is like, an exception. This is like all the jobs which were submitted. So let me go back to the head of this guy. So I have like the process ID, like how long did it take, what did it give me back. So I can look a bit, like it's not the nicest UI, but at the same time, what do I care? What I want is to be in my scripting environment and check what's going on. So So how does so now I'm connected to this cluster in Azure. I'm still in my scripting environment. What can I do with it? So one of the ways to maybe understand how Embrace is built is by looking at the async model, which was like one of the nicest contributions of F# to maybe the languages. So if I do a complete local version, not asynchronous of a function like say hello, like hello world, it would be something I have a function and printf the name, and then I can call it and it just works. So for instance, I could do something like local hello F#. And that's directly executed. For those of you who have already seen F# and the way async works, is like I can make pretty much everything async by wrapping it into a computation expression. So that's here I have a block which starts with async, which declares an async expression, open braces. And within these braces, you can think of it as a place where the language is a bit extended and will perform some extra magic behind the scenes. So I'm entering the async block, things will be asynchronous. And if I run this thing, it's like instead of a function which is taking a string and giving me back a string, now what I have is like something which is taking a string and giving me an asynchronous thing which will give me a string. And to get back the result, I need to call this, like here, and give it to somebody else to run. And so here I would say something like async hello. And now this goes, async takes it, somebody runs it, and comes back to me with a result. The cloud model on Embrace works exactly the same way. Instead of async, they are using a keyword or like a computation expression they created, which is not async, but which is cloud. And so the way I would write a cloud expression would be like this. And let me actually put them in parallel because you're going to see how it's essentially exactly the same. And so here what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, hey, I want a hello world, but this is going to happen in the cloud. And so this is now instead of giving me an async of string, this is give me a cloud string. So I have no result for the moment. And if I want this to run, I will have to give that expression and pass it to somebody to run. In that case, my cluster. I could also run it locally or wherever I want. So now what I'm going to do is I'm actually run it to the cluster which is running. And so you're going to see a couple of interesting things happening. So bam, 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 like suddenly my session is getting very active. And so what is happening right now is the code I just wrote in the script is actually being swallowed, uploaded, sent to my cluster. It's going to be compiled over there, running over there, and come back to me when it's done. And so now it came back. So granted, like this is probably the most inefficient I managed to get like a hello world which run like instantaneously to like 2 or 3 minutes, maybe not 2 minutes, but a couple of seconds. So this is maybe not the most impressive example, but like this is showing you like there is really lots of impressive magic going on. It's like you write your code, it lifts it, send it to the cluster, does something, comes back to you. That's kind of the spirit.
It
sends it to the cluster, and the cluster will do the right thing with it. Yeah, like it's I didn't do like 4 times hello world on 4 different machines. Like it's it creates a process, and you have like so we'll see a bit of these examples. So I'm essentially like inside the braces or inside the computation expression, you have a bit of a dedicated vocabulary, and it's in particular built to handle parallelism because that's really what you want to achieve. But it's really hard to parallelize hello world. Like, So here the problem is like I was kind of blocked because I told it like run it immediately. The other thing I can do is like really I can create something like a process. So instead of running it, I'm going to say take that thing and create a process. So this is going to do the same thing in that it's going to send it to the cluster, but now I'm not blocked. I can keep going on with my life. I can have a coffee if I want. I can read my emails. I can code. So I'm not blocked. And now I can now that the thing is gone to the cluster, I can ask like, what's the status of that job you just submitted? So this is actually really cool because you have, if you have expensive jobs, you can just send it and then keep thinking about things and keep coding. And then it's like, look, did the other thing come back? No, keep working, come back. Okay, it completed because Hello World was actually pretty fast. And so now I can just say like, give me back the result of that process and here we go. Okay, so that's not a super interesting example so far. What I want to do now is I want to take the local example I just ran, and I want to run it and cloudify it. So I'm going to do the one true and tested way to write code, and that's copy-paste. So I'm going to go to my local like patterns. I'm all about patterns, so copy-paste. Let's take this, and I'm going to move it here. And what I'm simply going to try is I take this and see what would it take for me to move it to the cloud. And so if I look at this as a system IO, I certainly don't want to do anything about it. My types are my types. Like, why would I change my domain simply because I want to run things in the cloud? A distance is always, it's still a distance, so no change. My prediction function also should not change, so I'm going to keep going. Aha, here is more interesting. So here I'm hitting data. And one of the problems I might have, so I'm going to take this, but if you think about it, like one thing which should be stupid is that I don't want, like, even if I have like hundreds of machines, like if they're trying to read data from my local machine, that's not going to go very well. So I probably want to move my data to the cloud. So this is what I'm going to do in a sec. And so instead, what I'm going to do is, like, instead of using the training path here, is I'm going to create a cloud training path. And this is going to be, let's say, something like, how could I call this, like summit. So I'm going to create a folder, and this is going to be training sample. Whoops. And I'm going to do a cloud validation path. And I'm also going to make it summit training validation sample. And so what I'm going to do next here is I'm actually going to move my data up to the cloud. So what I want is I want let cloud train. And this is going to be, I have a couple of primitives coming in Embrace, and one of them is called like a cloud file. And so I will let you guess what a cloud file is. Like, a cloud file is essentially the same abstraction as a file locally, or mimics it in lots of levels. And what I can do, for instance, is like do something like upload. And so here I'm going to upload the source. So the source is going to be training path, because that's the file I have locally. And the target will be cloud training path. And then what I can do is I can do cluster. And if you think also about this, is like this is an operation where it would be smart if I could run it actually for my machine, because although the data is here, I just want to load it and send it over. So I'm going to actually run it locally. And so what this is going to give me is cloud file info, which is kind of a file info. So I'm going to run this, and this is going to go up to the cloud. Great. I'm going to do immediately the same thing for the cloud test. Copy paste. Actually, that's great. Like the cloud test. So here I want validation path, I believe. And I want cloud validation path. And so the point here is like I really obviously I need to think a bit about the data, but the point here is I have abstractions which look pretty similar to a file, and really all it took to me to say take these CSV files, move them to the cloud, was really do this: is I create a cloud file, grab the data here, move it up, done. So now they are in blob storage wherever, but I can access them as a text file, which is exactly what I want. So now I have my files. Passing a line should be exactly the same, so that's cool. Train. So this one I will ignore, because now I don't really need to read the data outside here. And really what I want to do is, I want to run the computation of the percentage correct, but in the cloud. So I'm going to do something like, I'm going to remove this, I'm going to do let cloud correct. And so if I wanted to run up in the cloud, is I'm going to start with cloud. Is this a warning that I'm doing something wrong? And I'm going to do the same things I did here, which is the first thing I need is I need to read the data which I just shoved in the cloud. So I'm going to do that. I'm actually going to I'm going to cut it and put it in the cloud here. And so I'm going to proceed slightly differently. So I'm going to do. First, I want you to read the file in the cloud in there. So let train equal cloud file dot read all lines. That's kind of what I had before, so that's exactly what I want. And the file I had was called what? Cloudtrain.path. So that's nice. So now I'm reading my data. Let's test. File.readAllLines. So see, like, this is nice because this is really not fundamentally different from what I would write on my local machine. Like, I'm dealing with very similar abstractions here. Cloud test dot path. And now is like now I simply want to do, so let's say train one equals, and here I'm going to do the same thing as before essentially, which is going to be I read the line, so I'm going to do I'm going to do this actually. Equals train. So I'm using pretty much the same code as before. I'm going to do the test one. Let me kill this. That would be, whoops. That's going to be test. So far so good. So I pretty much replicated what I had, and the last thing I need to do is to compute the correct value. So I'm also going to simply use the same code as before. And here, I'm still going to compute them all the same way as before. And now is like I'm going to use test one. So let's say let eval equal, I'm going to compute my evaluation, and I'm just going to return it. And that should be finished. What is your problem here? Yeah, it's fine. So the hope I didn't fumble this too much, but really the broader point I wanted to do here is like first, I didn't change anything essentially in the domain, in the calculation, in all of these things. The only thing I did was instead of using file, I used cloud file. And I moved it into a cloud correct, into a cloud computation expression. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to simply run this. What was that? Thank you. I do like it when people follow what I'm doing. And thank you. I need to indent everything. There we go. And I'm going to return correct then. What am I doing? No, return, that's good, let eval. Yeah, that was good. I'm going to return. Yeah, now we are fine. Did I miss, oh. Test. Where's train? Thank you. See, this is where it's nice to have a language with static types. Also, it's like, okay, it helps when you actually look at what the compiler is telling you, but. So let's try to run this guy again. So now it's like I got something which is waiting to be executed because it is a. So it's telling me properly that what I'm going to get is a cloud float. And so I'm going to let a result. So let's say job, big job, equal, and that's going to be cloud correct. And I can say cluster dot run. Actually, I'm going to do create process. That's one good case to create a process because if it's big, I don't want to be stuck waiting for this guy. And so now it's going to lift like all that code and run it. And so I'm going to wait for this to come back. Dot status. Yeah, so it is running, so I can wait for like until it's there. While this is happening, so I'm going to let it do its job. I want to go a bit further. So like at that point, you could argue that this is I really showed you like a way to perform something which is fast on my machine, and which is going where I'm going to incur like a lot of penalty just because of the overhead of talking back and forth to the cluster. But what I already get is like if I want a big machine, I can already do that. Like here, I have just like two cores. I could easily run this on a machine with 60 cores, and just by itself is already interesting. The place where you're going to get a so let's see if this is actually done. It's completed. Okay, so that's nice. So now I'm going to see big job and big job dot result. And what I'm expecting for this is like if we see the same result as the local, so this is hopefully proving the point that I could take my local code, moving it up to the cloud, and get the same result with very minimal change in the way I think about things. The place, so this is when this was my backup code, so I'm just going to remove that. The place where this is going to start to pay off is when you want to do bigger stuff. So I'm probably not going, let's see if I can run it. Yeah, so this was similar. This is going to be interesting if I want to, so one case which happens all the time is you have lots of tasks which are embarrassingly parallelizable in machine learning. Like in this case, for instance, I tested how good my model was doing with one neighbor. How about two, how about three, how about four? This is like a dumb as bricks. If I'm on a local machine, I will have to run one, wait for it, run two, wait for it, run three, wait for it. And really, this is the type of thing where you can completely run all of these on a cluster in parallel. And this would, if I have like 100 machines, I could in theory run one to 100 with the same time just one takes me. So this is the type of problem where like something like Embrace shines. And so I will see if I can actually run it here. Yeah, it looks like it's going to work. So I wrote an example which was doing that. Instead of taking k equal 1, I'm going to write something which is going to test it from 1 to whatever I want. And so here, same thing. I open the cloud and say, like, hey, read the training file, read the testing file, blah, 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 nothing different. And here I can do something like standard F# code, take k from 1 to 3. For each of these, spin up a process. So that's going to go to a different machine, run that guy, same code as before, and I have this nice keyword here, which is cloud.parallel, and I'm going to let you guess what it does. It's like just like on F# you have array.parallel, cloud.parallel will take the processes, look at your machines, look at the number of cores, and split smartly the work so that it's just going to be spread across your network. So let me see actually if across your cluster. So let me, I'm going to be ambitious here and see if this runs. I'm going to do it from 1 to 10. So I probably, how did I call this guy? Let me go back up. So this is where cloud train and cloud test. So let me just fix this. Looks good. Cloud test. I'm hoping this will work. And I'm going to, 1 to 10 is nice. So now it should be able to run like this version in parallel. And it's telling me completely correctly that what I'm going to get now is like not one result, but like for k equal 1 to 10, I'm going to get an evaluation which is a float. So I'm going to run that process, send it up. And I'm going to ask for the status. So it's created, it's running. So when it comes back, so hopefully that gives you a sense for like where this is starting to be interesting, like specifically in machine learning cases. Like this is awesome because I do a lot of like take a parameter and search for the best value for that parameter. That's the type of thing which fits like super nicely. Or like still running. Maybe I was a bit overly ambitious on doing a search on 10. Well, okay. While this is coming back, I will go back to my slides for a second. And so what did I try to show? Is like I showed you like how you can, I didn't show you actually completely how to create a cluster, but like you can do that using the starter kit. I show you like how you can easily create computation expressions, essentially take your code and send it to the cloud and run it there fairly seamlessly while keeping all the beauty of your local development scripting environment. I showed briefly how you can exploit parallelism, and I showed you also how if you work with a local file, you can take that and work pretty much with the same abstraction, but moving it up to the cloud. So did this come back? Let's try that. I would like it to have come back. It completed, very nice. So now what I'm going to do is, okay, I have results. In a fashion similar to what Thomas was showing before, is like I want to maybe see what the results were. And so in this case, like that was, so this is probably, I tried my best to do something a bit sexy, but I have to admit that like, this is one of the least exciting shots ever. But like the bigger point here is like I managed to do my computation, it ran over, like it came back, and here it's showing me like how good or how bad it is for like one neighbor, two neighbors, three neighbors, and I could do that for like 100, it would not be that different. And so I see that actually in my particular case, the best is probably one neighbor, and it's like it doesn't really make a big difference. But the bigger point being I could work in the scripting environment without much of a difference, but with using the cloud freely. Good. Yep. Yes, you can. That's a very good question. The first, like one thing which is nice about Embrace is actually they have developed it initially with Azure in mind, but it's really completely agnostic. Like you could write implementations for targeting very different things. Like so, there is actually a guy who's working on making it work on the Amazon cloud, and you have one thing which they ship out of the box called Thespian, and it's actually going to run locally, so that you can simulate what's happening. Yeah, because that's helpful. Like, you probably want to make sure there is no obvious bug before like sending something which is going to crash, cost you like a lot of money on 100 machines and a crash midway through. But so you have all of that and it's really agnostic. Like you could write a version of Embrace using the same constructs targeting whatever you want. So I can. How about I do this? Is like how about I cover first the data example like briefly, because and then is like I can address that question and show you a bit more about it. Deal? Good. So the other problem I wanted to touch on was like essentially what we looked at was a big compute. On the other hand, is like one thing is hey, that CSV file fit on my machine. In some other cases, that file will not fit on my machine. I cannot download it on my machine. This is just not going to happen. So, and that's a fairly common task, not only for machine learning, it's just you have a large file. Like lots of companies do that, like reconcile, reconcile accounting at the end of the day, look at logs, that type of stuff. So the goal here is I'm going to show, to give you maybe a sense, two things actually. One of them is like I want to show you how you can work still from the scripting environment, but processing data never touching my laptop. So that's the, if I can do that, then I can let you imagine that you can work with however big the data, it won't matter. You're not limited by the machine you're using. And the second one is like, I mentioned that the C# API was good. The other thing I want to show is like, you don't have to run F# code. If you have C# code you want to use, like there are great machine learning libraries in C# like Accord, you can actually use them from that environment as well. And I want to show that. So of course, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a word count. Because like no machine learning talk is complete without a word count, so sorry about that. I tried to do something a bit, so I tried really hard to think about how can I make a word count maybe less deeply unappealing, how to put it that way. And so what I did was like I tried to build a visualization taking like all the headlines for The Guardian over 2014 and produce a visualization out of it. So I'm not going to go into all the details, but that's kind of what I built. And like they have a very nice JSON API, and so that's what I use to grab the data. So I'm going to get to counting. So let's go. Let me close this. And I'm going to go to the file aptly called like sexy word count. And so what I'm going to do like something very similar to what Thomas did for the weather, but here what I'm going to use is the Guardian API, which is like you call it, it gives you back JSON, and so what I'm going to do here is like same thing as essentially as they did, is like take the API, take the URL, and what I can do now is I can do something like type guardian equal JSON provider, and I'm going to simply pass it the sample URL. And here I have the guardian, and now what I should be able to do is I should be able to do something like let sample equal guardian dot get sample, and that would be then And so you can see that here I'm already like I'm getting essentially data live from the guardian. Took me again one line, so that's pretty cool. So for the sake of time, is like I'm going to go a bit faster than what I can grab my sample that way, and then I can start just hitting the API and get data. Like for instance, I can say grab the results and show me what the title of the headline was. And so if I do that, I'm going to do this, that's going to be a bit nicer. Like this is what's happening currently. Apparently the reclusive French rap duo shoot to top of iTunes chart. Like this is what's happening now. So I'll let you check if that's really the news. So anyways, like the point is like it's very easy to get data here. And this one, I wrote also one thing I really like about F#, it makes it pretty easy to write tiny DSLs to just play with data. So here, like rather than having to fiddle with the creating all the time like different URLs, I wrote like a couple of little functions, and now is like I can do things like this. I can say like get me, grab me data from that date to that date. This is the number of pages I want for the and this is I think pretty clean. Like took me like 4 or 5 lines, and I get something which is readable, usable, and which is going to take 2 dates, a number of pages, and give me back what the guardian tells me there is. So I can, for instance, test it on a request. Let's say if I grab 20 headlines for today, and I can now show the results. And again, like it's the reclusive French rap duo apparently is really important. Again, the nice thing is I get also like types and everything, which is very cool. Like I can do article dot, and I'm going to get like this was the section, this was the type, this was so. This is like an extremely convenient way to explore your data. So the point here is like I can now grab the guardian data. I don't want to download it to my machine. It's not going to be big data, but like you could imagine how I have a data source somewhere and I want to grab it, and I want to put it in my cluster. So here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say so grab my cluster. And now I can do something which is never ever going to touch my machine. So let's say I'm going to call it again like Summit. So, and I'm going to create something. So in the cloud, so I'm going to again use a cloud computation expression. What this is going to do is like sequence tick start date 2014 first, increase 364 days, and for each day grab the data. And you can see like a nice thing here because like there is a throttle on the guardian, so I had to add this horrible threading sleep in the middle of it. But normally, like this would not be necessary. So let me run that, and I'm going to save it to the cloud and run it. And so this is neat. Like this is going essentially over the web to the guardian, never touching my machine. Everything is going to be executed on the cluster and going to save the data on the cluster as well. So the exact data is not very important, but the point is that you can just like operate from your machine seamlessly without having any limitation on what this machine can do. So now it's like processing stuff, and doing cluster.run was probably not a smart idea because I'm blocked for the moment. So I'm hoping this is going to come back to me quick. This was a test. It's creating a, practically it's creating a blob in blob storage. But you could do whatever you want. Like in this case, I'm just using, I'm creating a cloud file. But like if you had this, you can use whatever .NET code you want or whatever you have. So if you want to do a...
If it's caching it in blob storage, can I reference that existing...
Yes.
Can I reference the existing blob, or do I need to re-download from the
guard? You can. Yes, you can. Like the essentially what it did here is, create a blob name under a Summit called Guardian. So that's, it will be there. Okay, yeah, this was an error. I should not have like launched This was not big data, but like now my computation is running, so it's like I have to wait for it to come back.
Excuse me?
Yes?
Can it be downloaded straight to memory?
So
do you need to store it in some persistent somewhere?
I don't, not necessarily. Like the you can redo whatever. Like really what the example here is about, like I can read data completely outside of my machine, and I can store it completely outside of my machine. Otherwise, if you want to download it to your machine, you can. If you want, like any scenario is possible. Does this answer your question or not?
Well, what I mean is, so you said that this is like you kind of spirits like Spark.
Uh-huh.
So Spark is common to this, it just loads data from wherever to memory and operates just, you know, on data cached in memory.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. Yeah, you can do that. I mean, the first example I showed is showing you something a bit similar to that. For instance, it's like I had it. Yes, so you can keep some things in memory. Like you have something a bit like a session, and you can be explicit about, like, for instance, I want that data to be available in memory in that place. That type of scenario is possible. Yeah, because you don't necessarily want to read and write all the time. Yeah, it is possible as well. Okay, so that thing finished. So now it's like I loaded my data, it's over there. And I'm going to show one abstraction quick. So one thing which is nice here is lots of the jobs you're going to do with data look like what you would do with a sequence. It's like I want to take data, do something to it. And so Embrace comes also with a nice abstraction called a Cloudflow. And so Cloudflow supports things like, so think of it as a sequence in the cloud. So here I'm going to take the file I just created. Cloudflow dot, I'm going to do of cloud file by line. And now I can do many things. Like I can do Cloudflow, for instance, Cloudflow dot length. So how many things did I get? And here I'm going to do a cluster dot run. And so what this is going to do is like it's going to, you can see it, like it looks like a sequence, and it's just going to take that file, take it line by line, but actually partition it across my cluster, and give me the length. So here it's running it, and it's going to tell me that I have, this is surprisingly, that. So I would like to see, I would need to this would take probably more discussion than I can give just right there, but like you get some, by default you get something which is working, nicely. You can do things like cloud file with degree of parallelism, so you have, for instance, that type of control that you can do. By default, it's nice, and if you want, you have control at the lower level of what you want to do. And Cloudflow, so I'm going to speed up here, but Cloudflow, you have things like filter, fold, so all the things you would expect from a sequence, except that they are going to be smartly distributed, so you could process like much, much longer files, or much, much bigger sequences of whatever you want to do. So I'm going to trust that you guys can actually picture the type of thing you could do. Like you could take five, you could pass it to an array, you could grab the headlines which contain Z, like whatever you want to do. And this is pretty fast. And again, like this is, I'm getting locally, so the Cloudflow is actually going to the cluster, doing the hard work over there, and bringing back pretty seamlessly just what I want for my data. So this is pretty neat. This I just asked the length.
The whole length?
Yeah, but the one you would want to do, like we could totally do that. So yeah, like I asked for the length of the sequence.
I see.
So anyways, like I'm going to speed up a bit. And so imagine like I took all of, okay, the one thing I want to show, but I'm not going to show because of time, that's actually a bit too bad. But so the one point I wanted to make was you can actually totally use also C# code in this context. So it's not like you don't have to write all your code in F#. So and you might have some perfectly good code which is already sitting somewhere and doing what you want. So why would you rewrite it? So I wrote like here an example which is a word count in C# because why not? And so I have something which is going to take a string and return like the unique words, return the count for the words, stuff like that. And if that code works, I don't want to eliminate it, so I'm going to use it here. And I can just load my C sharp library, and I can start calling it from here. And now I'm going to first running it from the F sharp script. That's not a problem. And now I'm going to ask you to trust me, but I can actually call it here in a Cloud Flow. So with a bit of effort of imagination, use your DLL. You can use it for the in that context as well. Like, it's not limited just to F sharp. So that's what I got on this. The one thing I'm going to show you is, like, long story short, is like I spent way too much time on this what I built is like a visualization of the year of 2014. So just because I gave you like lots of code, I'm going to show you this because I also like the result quite a bit. So I'm going to run it right now. So what this is like taking the Guardian. Essentially, I worked a bit on extracting the words day by day, which were important, and like trying to build a nice. Whoops, I should have showed it here. Where are you? Yeah, this is the type of thing I built. So this is maybe artsy or something, but I thought it was a bit more interesting. So essentially what you see is like March, April, and all of this. Like this is going to this is extracting like from the headlines. The words which were frequent and unusual, so you see Farage pop up. Like, I remember, like in March or April, apparently there was an incident with a giraffe in Copenhagen, which showed up, like all this type of thing. So I just, this is what I did. Let me now close. So the conclusion here is like on the data side is like first you get a model which is simple and powerful and which is fairly close to what you would do with essentially you get like all the power of distribution and working in the cloud with very limited effort on your side and things which are actually not that different conceptually from what you're doing locally. Usable from C sharp, you can use C sharp, you can use F sharp, you can use it from C sharp, from F sharp. What you get is like all the beauty of scripting. And just you can use all the power you want when you want it for just the amount of time you need it. You can run it from an application. So, and the one thing compared to Spark is like, to be fair, is like Spark is nice because it also has like machine learning libraries and a good ecosystem. And this one is like you're going to be a bit more. You will have to write a bit more by hand because like it hasn't been around for that long. Shameless plug: I have a book, but that's not important. And so yeah, that's what I got. So thank you very much. And. And I think the timing is actually is a good time for lunch. Is that correct? Like,
Did you talk a bit about exception propagation? Like, do you get error conditions back from the process?
You do get errors. So, actually, it's a great question, and the answer is like I don't know because I was lucky enough. Like, I have used it in cases where I didn't have to deal with that problem. I believe that, as far as I know, is like the model is fault tolerant, and I believe that, like async, you should get something which is probably not bad, but you will have to. The keyword would be probably because I haven't tried it myself, so I can't tell you. Actually, we could try it out afterwards if you want. Like, just run it and throw an exception and see what happens.
So did you do so? What I noticed in your demo is that it appears that the underlying cluster that you define takes care of all the partitioning, all the distribution.
Yep.
So all that intelligence is built in, or do you build it yourself when you define the cluster?
The cluster has the size it has, and Embrace defines primitives which allow you to tell it like how to be smart. Like, for instance, cloud.parallel. So like you have these primitives, but you don't have to do anything special about the cluster itself. For that matter, you could have a hybrid cluster where, like, I could put this machine on the cluster as well, put it all into one cluster, and it will be smart enough to put just much less work on this machine than on the worker. So
just by doing nothing, just by default. So
that, yes.
Using the defaults is smart enough to.
That's correct.
Distribute all the work and everything. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
More questions? I don't know how to do it with a script here, but I have done it in the past. Like there was a web UI which is convenient, and yeah, you can actually up it The case which would be more interesting is like what happens if you have 16 and you kill half of them, but like it works like the yeah, like it's going to take time, and suddenly you see that it's going to take 2 days, and so you might want to crank it up, and that's completely feasible. Yep. Good. Then sounds like a good time for lunch.
Right. Is the sound all right? Just for the, so we have some people who are probably watching the video. They're not invited to join us for the lunch. But just to say a few closing words for the people who are watching the video. Thanks for watching it. And go to fsharp.org, go to fslab.org, and you can easily find contact details for me and Matthias. So if you're curious, if you want more links, more resources, then just feel free to get in touch with us, and we'll be more than happy to share and send you tons of other material. For the people who are staying here, so we now have 1 hour lunch break, and looks like there's some food over there. In the afternoon, we have two more things happening. So around 1, we'll have some hands-on workshop. So I guess the idea is, like, you just listened to us for like 2 hours, so you hopefully have some idea about what you can do. But really, sort of the place where you can get the most out of it is if you come to the workshop and stay with us, then we'll give you a fun task to work on, and you can sort of write a little bit of F# code, get some hands-on experience, and actually try doing some things, which is probably the best way to actually benefit from the day, because just listening to talks, it's nice, you see some shiny charts or less so shiny charts, but you don't really learn that much as if you try to write some code in F#. So we'll have a nice demo for you where you have to fill in missing pieces. The task will be to recognize natural languages. So we'll give you some data files that I downloaded from Wikipedia, and you'll write an algorithm that will, given some text, it will try to guess what language is it. So it should be a fun problem as well. And then after that, we have a free space Ask the Expert session. And the idea is we have these nice 4 screens around the room. So what we are going to do is we'll just occupy some of them. And there's a bunch of people who have done interesting things with machine learning. We'll have more people coming as well. And me and Matthias will be around too. So if you come up with some questions, or you want to learn more, or you have done something interesting, then that will be an opportunity to actually plug it into the projector, show it to others. Because really what I'd like to sort of do here is to connect everyone who does something interesting related to machine learning and F#. So for demos and more questions, we'll have the last slot of the day. One more important thing. After a full day of workshops and talks, it's a good tradition in the F# community to go somewhere for a beer. So we will definitely try to find some place in the evening where we can go and chat more. If you want to join us, you're more than welcome to. We actually need someone to join us because we don't know where to go. people watching the recording can join us as well. Just stop by at the building 27 around the end of the session. And I think that's all the intros, so let's do the lunch.